And you think about 8 minutes and 46 seconds, you know, of an officer having his knee in someone's throat for that long. Video or no video, it doesn't matter. No one deserved to lose their life when it could have been prevented from what I've seen and from what the world has seen. So, you know, that's what the T-shirt is all about, is the world is watching. You know, everyone knows the time. Everyone knows what's going on. You saw all the, you know, great protests that went on, you know, throughout the, you know, throughout the whole world, you know, supporting us here in America, but more importantly, supporting George Floyd and his family. You know, so, you know, that's what it was about.
A powerful statement, a powerful message from LeBron James last night. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by 2016 NBA champ Richard Jefferson and New York Times bestseller Brian Windhorst live from the Cobra Dome. Coming up, the Lakers clinched the top seed in the West last night for the first time in a decade. How important is the top seed considering all these games are, you know, in a bubble without fans? We'll discuss that. But first, Zion Williamson was on the court at the end of a basketball game that counted. This would not normally in itself deserve some big celebration, but there is nothing normal about what's going on right now. The Pelicans are in a race to compete in a play-in game that has never before existed, with a player the likes of which the league has never seen, whose conditioning has been affected by a complex set of rules created around a global pandemic. So yeah, it's been a bit chaotic for Zion and the Pelicans. And yet, there they were last night, standing toe-to-toe with Memphis in what is becoming a wonderfully messy scramble for the West's final playoff seed. The game had some funny moments. Listen here to ESPN's Doris Burke, who had just correctly predicted a referee's call.
James Capers with the call. Common foul, offensive foul on Lonzo Ball. Nothing more.
I do like being right. Ask my ex-husband.
Happens every time.
My God, she is amazing. The game also had some scary moments. Here's Zion losing his shoe and then staying down on the court for long enough to evoke comparisons to that game at Duke where he injured himself blowing out his sneaker. Ugh. At least he'd get up and continue just fine, which is more than one can say for the Grizzlies, who were playing on the second night of a back-to-back and looked it. Memphis shot just 40% from the field, 28% from three, and even the usually springy Ja Morant was mostly grounded. Meanwhile, the Pelicans star rookie, enjoying a bump in his minutes restriction, was aggressive from the start of the game. Zion would later say that his coaches had asked him to, quote, spark the team. And this ridiculous 56-foot alley-oop from Lonzo Ball certainly threw off fire. I mean, come on, this is so fun. Still, the real power of what Zion can do came at the game's end, after the Grizzlies had cut New Orleans' lead to four. In each of the Pelicans' previous two games, Zion had been watching moments like that from the bench, not because he's dealing with a particular injury, but rather due to fears over his conditioning leading to an injury. He'd missed 12 days of team workouts after leaving the bubble for a family emergency, and yeah, even at points last night, he looked tired and not quite himself, especially on defense. But he also at times looked electric, and with the team's medical staff increasing his court time from 15 minutes to 25, he was the most crucial thing available when it mattered most. With about 3 minutes left on the clock, here he is bullying his way to the basket with Mark Jones on the call.
Five on the shot clock. Williamson inside. Put some muscle in his hustle. Wow. In traffic, went over the top of everybody.
Some muscle in his hustle is right. Not long after that, Zion would muscle his way to another basket. He also sank two free throws over that stretch. Altogether, it was six straight points for the Pelicans, right when they needed it most, keeping New Orleans ahead on the scoreboard. Points that easily might not have materialized otherwise if Zion had been on the bench. You know that song in Hamilton about the room where it happens? Well, Zion got his seat back at the big boy dinner table last night. He made the most of it and was clearly ecstatic about it after the game.
It's just my competitive spirit. You know, I'm not even gonna lie to you. It just hits different in a bad way when I'm on the bench in the fourth quarter and there's nothing I can do to help my team win. So, I felt alive. It was just great to be out there doing whatever I can to help my team win.
the win was the Pelicans' first here in the bubble. Meanwhile, the Grizzlies have yet to win a game here in Orlando, which means the race of the West's eighth seed remains gloriously a murky mess. Remember, the NBA will stage a play-in game for that eighth spot if whoever ends up in nine finishes within four games in the standings. Not only is the Grizzlies' lead narrowing, they have by far the toughest schedule remaining of any team here in Orlando. Honestly, with the way things are going, this whole thing will likely come right down to the end of these seeding games. And as we saw last night, if Zion is allowed to be there at the end, on the court, where it all is happening, he might just tip the balance of the whole thing. Richard, do you think the Pelicans turned a corner after that win last night?
I won't say it turned a corner. I think they took a step in the right direction. Look, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, these are both younger teams. Not a ton of veteran leadership, not a ton of guys that have been through these battles. So it's not a surprise that they won a combined one game. So for me, I just really look at this, they need to continue building. If they continue building, they have all the pieces, but Zion being healthy is a big, big piece of that.
So the thing about the situation with Zion is a little bit complicated because with Zion, you know, they didn't cleanly roll this plan out. And I think it's partially because they didn't really have a way to set it up because they weren't 100% sure what he was going to play in this first game. So this whole thing has been messy, but they have had a methodology to this. And they have allowed themselves the ability to protect Zion while also keep their team in it. They easily could have gotten a win in that first game. They didn't compete in the second game, but they could have gotten a win in the first game. And they did win the third game, and they've got five games left where they're going to be able to still salvage getting into ninth place, which is what their goal is. You know, the thing about Zion is we've really made this hard on him. I mean, the collective media and the whole world, because we set him up as the focus of summer league. We set him up as the focus of opening night. We set him up on Christmas Day. We set him up at the start of this rehab and this restart, and he's never quite been healthy. And so that's been a big challenge for him, and one of the things that is just unfortunate about this early part
of his career. It is also something that is an opportunity for someone if they want that highest level of stardom in the NBA, and he has shown in so many flashes
Thank you, Rachel. He is ready
to meet that moment, both with his play on the court and just his megawatt personality. But yeah, they got to perform as a group, the Pelicans. I do think that all they need to do is get into the play-in game, because if they are in there, even if they're the ninth seed, they would then face a first night matchup where if they won that, they would get to the second night, have a second night matchup. And as we see, they have some success against the Grizzlies. They've beaten them all season. So it would be good for them to get in that play-in scenario. All right, guys, I want to move on to the Lakers, who clinched the top seed in the West last night. That's the first time they've done that in 6 years. Anthony Davis was hot, 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 leading all scorers with 42 points. LeBron dropped a very efficient 22 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists. And after the game, these were some great quotes from LeBron in the LA Times talking about how satisfying it was to lock up the top seed. Quote, "It feels damn good to be number one in the West. They said I couldn't do it. I'll enjoy this one." Brian, are you with LeBron? How significant is locking up the top seed in the West for the Lakers?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I was kind of surprised to see the LeBron James that I listened to for 10 years tell me that seeding doesn't matter. LeBron, who won all three titles as less than a number one seed, usually a number two seed, talk about seeding being important. Now, he may have a method to his madness here. He's got a whole bunch of teammates who haven't had experienced this before. And I think he also may want to inspire them to keep on going and acknowledge the fact that they did overcome expectations and get this number one seed. But I was surprised that he would ever set his standard, quite frankly, that low. He's never been a guy who's worried about this. He's always been the type of guy, and I'm sure Richard heard this in the locker rooms, just get us into the playoffs, get me into the playoffs. It doesn't matter where we're seated. And I'd also like to point out, the number one seed has never mattered less in the history of the NBA playoffs. So I definitely take my hat off to the Lakers. Tremendous regular season. You are owed a compliment, but it is a fleeting compliment at best.
No, Brian, you said everything extremely well. This is one thing that I want to really establish. For him, it was more about everything that was said when he was in the Eastern Conference. Oh, well, you're doing it in the Eastern Conference. You're doing it in the Eastern Conference. So then he moves to the Western Conference, has a struggle last year, and then doesn't make the postseason. So here he gets healthy, gets Anthony Davis, and now he's the number one seed in the best conference. And so for him, that was just something that was a motivational thing. People said he couldn't do it. It was something that was used against him. And so now he's in a position to say, hey, look, I did this, but you're right. The Lakers, these teams, there is no participation trophy. They only judge themselves by championships, not number one seeds.
But I get it, right? Because, Richard, to your point, he was told over and over, like, I don't know, his first season with the Lakers didn't go so well. There was controversy over the Anthony Davis trade, how he handled things with the younger players in his locker room. And then even once they started the season, there were doubts about how this roster was compiled. So I think he has been through a different couple years than he was previous to all those times in Cleveland where, Richard, you were playing with him, Brian, you were covering with him, and he said, seeding doesn't matter. For him, I think the words last night, and I was standing a few feet away when our friend Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times was talking to LeBron about this, you could hear it in his voice. It felt very personal, and it wasn't about the playoff positioning in terms of seeding. It just felt more like, hey, I accomplished something after slogging through two seasons where things did not go his way in the way, frankly, LeBron is used to things going his way. All right, guys, coming up, stick with us, Michael Porter Jr., dropping a career-high 37 points last night. We will talk about whether this is a blip or a trend for the Nuggets rookie. Stick around.
And whenever you're ready.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or miss league.
Make, miss.
It's a make or miss league, baby.
Make bygones. Remember Shake Milton and Joel Embiid's argument the other day? Well, all is forgiven now. Shake hit a game winner versus the Spurs. Richard, this wasn't such a big deal to begin with, but does winning cure everything?
Yeah, it does cure everything, but at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. It's funny, we've watched, my favorite thing about the Jordan documentary is that it finally gave people an insight to how much friction goes on when you're trying to compete at that type of high level. So we're completely fine.
Brian?
The reason that he was open was because Joel Embiid was getting double teamed. They are better when they work together. Come on, guys, you can do it.
Miss accuracy. Rudy Gobert threw a no-look pass earlier in last night's game, and he was feeling himself a little bit. Then he hit JaVale in the face. Brian, was Rudy a little too confident here?
Oh, Rudy was definitely way too
this
confident,
was actually
but that's
good
his
defense.
Thing.
This was actually good defense by JaVale McGee. Even
with
though
his face?
He got in the passing lane with his face. He actually was rotating in, and Joe Ingles was going to get a wide-open three, and he blocked it. It cost him a little bit of pain, but they would have given up a three.
Well done. Well done. Well done by
Richard,
JaVale.
I don't know if
great
you ever
defense.
Played defense with your face, but these are important questions. All right, make dimes. Ben Simmons had a bad game by his standards last night, but he did have some highlight dimes and a nice little finger roll. Richard Jefferson, how tough is he in the open court?
He is, and he's so good in the open court that people question giving up Joel Embiid so that they can play fast. It's a little confusing, but, you know, look, they have a great combination. Joel Embiid in the half court, him in the transition.
Yeah, I'm cool with us just pointing out Ben Simmons' assists because they were awesome, but he had more fouls than assists in this game. I think that should be pointed out.
By the way, my producer Andrea and I are here having in-depth conversations about his assists and fouls, so, you know, it's a topic all over. Make buckets. Fred VanVleet on fire yesterday. He dropped 36 points on 16 shots, hit 7 threes. Richard, we need to come up with a good nickname for Fred VanVleet because the one out there right now, Steady Freddy, I mean, come on, we could do better here. RJ?
No, Steady Freddy, Scary Freddy, any of that is fine. I love them all. But listen, you just keep getting buckets, winning championships, you keep balling, you get paid. Don't worry about nicknames. Nicknames don't do anything.
I like FVV. What's wrong with FVV?
It does not roll off the tongue.
You know immediately who you're talking about.
Come on.
About. That's fair.
I don't know. And then we try to call Richard by his initials and he gets cranky. So I don't know if people don't like that. I don't know what's going on, but I feel we could do better. This is a challenge to everyone out there of our Jump family. We can do better. All right, I want to take a look at some highlights from Nets Bucks because that is going on right now. Let's take a look at Eric Bledsoe making his bubble debut for Milwaukee. Nice to see him back. Giannis started off strong, hitting two threes in the first quarter. And then on the other side, Jamal Crawford making his Nets debut. He drops a nice dime to Donta Hall for the dunk. And the very next possession, Crawford buries the three. Unfortunately, he did leave the game with a hamstring injury, so nice to see Jamal Crawford back where he belongs. We will keep posted, though, on his health. Now, in the second quarter, we had a little brouhaha breaking out between Giannis and Donta Hall. A melee, a kerfuffle, gentlemen. This, you know, just got a little little bit heated. But later in the second, Justin Anderson dunks on Giannis, so, hey, you know, it all comes back around. I want to give a little live look in now at Nets Bucks. This is live right now in the third quarter. So, Richard, as we're watching the action here, do you think that Milwaukee should be afraid of the Raptors after what's happened here in the bubble for the last few days?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think Milwaukee should be afraid of everyone. And the reason why I say that is because they haven't won a championship yet. They don't have that confidence yet. And so the way I look at them as they have to play with a chip on their shoulder. They have to come out, try and dominate the 8 seed and then dominate whoever they get next. And so they should be fearful of everyone. They should show everyone the same amount of respect. And I think Toronto is going to be a team that demands respect.
You know, I got to say, if I watched the end of that Bucks game the other night, they were not good in a half-court offense at the end of the game. And that is the biggest thing that is between them and the championship is executing that half-court offense. And they obviously have not played great offense today against the Nets. So I'm not going to freak out at all. We're very early in the process here, but the Bucks are going to have to rise their level of play.
I mean, look, we're talking about, if you talk about them versus the Raptors, you're talking about the defending champions, right? And I know that they are a different team without Kawhi Leonard, but they clearly have shown all season that they have championship makeup, championship confidence, a huge amount of talent still on that roster. Of course, I think Milwaukee should be a little bit scared of the defending champions of the NBA. It should be a good matchup. The Celtics, the Heat, there's a bunch of teams in the East that they will have to get through to get to the finals. And just because they are favored and we expect them to, doesn't mean, right, that it's going to be a cakewalk. So I think it's interesting. We'll keep an eye on this Bucks-Nets game for you. In the meantime, I want to shift gears, talk about Michael Porter Jr.'s breakout performance for the Nuggets yesterday against the Thunder. MPJ scoring 37 points, grabbing 12 rebounds, leading Denver to the overtime win. So, Richard, do you expect more scoring performances like this from him going forward? Because he, of course, has had such an uneven launch in the NBA with all the injuries.
Well, he's super
young.
We've
been hearing
and so
for a year
I think this
about
shows
how Michael
what he
Porter
has
Jr.
the ability
was going
to
be a factor going forward.
I like it, the stereo, guys. I think this is fine. Richard, why don't we start with you?
I think he's a talented player, and we're going to see a ton of him, even like with Bol Bol. It put them in a position to take a risk on Bol Bol because I think they figured out that they got something special in Porter Jr. But I think it's going to be multiple years before we start seeing this happen consistently, but he's definitely going to be a scorer and a player in this league.
Yeah, they have a huge investment in Nikola Jokic, and he's going to be their center and their offensive maker for years to come. But what Michael Porter Jr. can do is stretch the floor for him. These two guys are going to be together, working together for the foreseeable future. And while, no, I don't know if Michael Porter is going to be this type of player on a regular basis, the fact that he could be a threat to do this, even if that doesn't happen regularly until next year, is what the Nuggets are hoping is in their future.
Also, if you look at the Nuggets team structure, and Richard knows this because he played there under this coach, Mike Malone normally needs newer guys to prove to him that they can do it in clutch situations, in real game action, is the reason we only see guys being eased into the Nuggets lineup as opposed to just thrown out there to see what they can do. So by showing his coach that he can do this sometimes if necessary, I think that will build with his experience with this team, and we might see more of him in the coming games. All right, guys. Brian Windhorst is with us, so that means we've got to play your favorite game, Brian. Should we be buying or selling the scoring surge inside the NBA bubble over the next few games? Stick around for the stat market. You're watching The Jump. Tomorrow, we've got another great NBA doubleheader for you. OKC taking on the Lakers at 6:30 Eastern. Then the Nets square off against the Celtics. Our coverage tips off with NBA Countdown, 6 o'clock Eastern on ESPN and the app. And welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, here with Richard Jefferson, Brian Windhorst. Our researchers have been digging into all the numbers since the NBA restart, and that means it is time, gentlemen, to open up the stat market. We give you numbers. You buy if you think that the numbers will remain steady or increase. You sell if you think they're going to decrease. And all stats are entering play today, so does it feel like we've had a lot of close games? That's because we've had a lot of close games. 36% of the games in the bubble have been decided by 4 points or less. That's up from 20% during the regular part of the season. So, Richard, do you buy or sell that we will continue to see close games the rest of the way in the bubble?
I'm buying. I think we're going to keep seeing these types of games because you have really good teams. And everyone understands that you're playing for something. You're revving up for the postseason. And so I think these guys and everyone's going to be focused. There's no travel. There's a level of consistency there, so you're going to get better performances.
Yeah, the no travel thing is really interesting. If we took out travel, we might be able to get closer games. So let's think about that. I'm going to sell, though, because I actually think that as some teams fall out of the race and as they get ready for the playoff games, they're going to reduce their stars' minute level. And so I actually think we may see less close games. That said, that fight for the eighth seed is hotter than I could possibly imagine, so there'll be a lot to watch there.
And look, I think as we look at teams' strength of schedule, we're going to have to factor that in, too, because some teams are going to rest and sit their stars. I do think it's interesting now, though, with the bottom eight teams dropped out. I mean, Richard, you're right. We're seeing a better level of competition. This is possibly an argument for relegation in basketball. Maybe we need to work out a system with the G League so that we have better teams competing in the NBA all the time. All right, another telling number. Since the restart, we're getting an average of 233 points per game. That is an increase of 10 points per game over, again, the regular part of the season. Fouls and free throws are both way up, which is a major reason why, Richard, buy or sell scoring will continue to rise in the bubble.
I'm going to sell, and I'm going to sell because I think right now you're getting guys that are rested, they're healthy, there's no travel, they have everything that they need, the same thing that we just talked about. But ultimately, as this starts to increase and as the intensity starts to increase, the better defensive teams are going to, their defense, their schemes are going to start locking in, especially in the postseason when you start to see teams multiple times. So I think that the scoring is ultimately going to come down. It typically always does.
That's a veteran take right there. So I'm going to sell as well. I also think that in playoff games, historically, we've seen scoring goes down for the reasons Richard just mentioned. Although I have to say, Rachel, a lot of gamblers thought that there was going to be low-scoring games because the players are going to be out of shape and out of rhythm. The people that went with the under the first few days took a bath and the casinos won. So this was a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was at the Rockets-Mavericks game on the second night of the new restart season. And the first half they played had so much scoring. It was the highest scoring first half among any two teams in the NBA in 30 years. So yeah, take the over. All right, guys, the Spurs are coming off a loss, but they are 2-1 in the bubble. They are neck and neck with the Blazers for the ninth spot in the West. They really have a chance to make their 23rd straight playoff appearance. Richard, are you buying or selling the Spurs' playoff hopes here?
Ooh, this is a tough one. It's hard to bet against the Spurs, but ultimately I'm going to sell. I think with no LaMarcus Aldridge, no Brent Forbes, I think they're just a little bit shorthanded. DeMar DeRozan has been really, really inconsistent. He had two struggles in first halves, but then had great second halves, had a great game against the 76ers. But ultimately, if you don't have that balance, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to make this final push.
Yeah, I'm going to buy their short-term future, but I'm going to sell their the bubble, because their young players have really looked good, and this is what they're building their team around. And it is 22 consecutive years, and you know, someday that streak's gonna have to come to an end. Wouldn't surprise me though if they got lucky at the lottery and hopped up into the top four right after we sell their hopes in this bubble.
It's the Spurs way, man. All right, let's move on to the Mavericks. They've lost two nail biters since the restart. They are now just 2-10 in games decided by 3 points or fewer. On top of that, Dallas has the second worst clutch time offense in the NBA this season. Guys, I have personally heard opponents say all we got to do is get them right to where we want them, with them leading by a couple points or less with 5 minutes left in the game, and we'll be home free. Richard, buy or sell the Mavs' poor record in close games?
I'm buying it. I'm buying it 100%. They have the number one rated offense in NBA history. How were they the seventh seed? They don't have great perimeter defenders. I'll say this, Porzingis is a great defender, but then after that, it severely drops off. Luka's good, they have a good team defense, they have a great offense, but they don't have anybody late in game that can just go up and get stops. You go look at a team like the Clippers, they have so many guys that can go and get stops. They just don't have enough on the perimeter, and this is a perimeter league right now, for them to be able to get the stops that they need late in games.
As much as I'd like to disagree with Richard, I have to agree with them again. The thing about it is, if you look at the percentages, and it's a significant sample size now, Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis clutch outside shooting. The numbers are poor. Teams know that, and late games, they let them have those shots. They make decisions and rotations defensively to force Luka into threes. He hasn't been hitting them. Obviously, at some point, I'm betting that he does, but I don't know if that's going to happen right now.
All right, let's go live, guys, to Mavericks Kings. They tipped off at 2:30 Eastern. And as we pop into the game here, Richard, what can the Mavs do to improve their late game execution? Pressure on defenses.
Porzingis for three. No. Kings ball up five. How can the Mavs do better in crunch time? I think their offensive weapons that they have are perfect. They just need to balance a little bit more with attacking. I like what they've done with Porzingis, putting him at the free throw line like Dirk, and making it very difficult to double team him, and it's an easy shot over anybody. But ultimately, they need to get stops. I'm not worried about their offensive production. I'm more worried about their defensive production late in games.
Brian, what do you think? How can they make this better?
I heard nothing.
Well, I also think that they just need a little bit of experience playing together. So it's an issue that, it's going to take them a couple transaction cycles to balance out this roster, which is fine. They're still young. I would even argue that they're ahead of the curve. I always point out that LeBron didn't make the playoffs his first 2 years. Kevin Durant didn't make the playoffs his first 2 years. The fact that Luka is going to get playoff minutes in his second year means, in my mind, they're ahead of schedule. So let Donnie Nelson and Mark Cuban go to work and get them a couple of complimentary players, and look out for the
Mavericks.
Absolutely. In the
future. All right, guys, that is the closing bell, meaning the stat market is done for the day. We will be back with another edition soon. Coming up, we're going to fix all the audio issues so Richard can hear us. We're going to talk about the Grizzlies, whether in danger of dropping out of the eighth seed. And we're going to get Malika Andrews on the show. She's going to join us from the arena to talk a little bit more Zion. First, though, here is what The Jump recommends for today. I loved this piece. Zach Lowe talking on ESPN.com and the app about the new relaxed dress code policy for coaches inside the bubble. Some coaches are team polo. Some coaches are team suit. There is a lot of controversy here. Read it during the break, and we'll be right back. Tonight, from the IMG Bubble in Bradenton, Florida, two more WNBA games for you on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. We got Brittany Griner and Diana Taurasi and the Mercury taking on the Atlanta Dream at 7 o'clock Eastern. And then the Sun, led by the league's top scorer, Dawana Bonner, squaring off against Sue Bird and Breonna Stewart and the Storm. And now joining The Jump, always so happy to have Malika Andrews with us. She is also here in the bubble. You've got the Clippers warming up behind you, Malika. Welcome. And I want to start off with Zion Williamson. He played 25 minutes last night. He had a fun moment with you where he looked a little confused about the new social distancing protocol in the post-game interview. But as usual, you had the info for him. You had the goods. What are you hearing, Malika, about the Pelicans' plans for Zion's minutes going forward?
Yeah, well, to be fair, Rachel, and you know this all too well, also being on the sidelines, there's like 7 or 8 million robotic cameras, and there's just no way to know. I get confused where to look, so I can't blame him. But in terms of Zion's minutes, from what I've heard from people within the Pelicans, this slow, cautious ramp up, if his body allows it, is what's going to continue. So last night he played a little bit more than he had been playing, but still his longest stretch on the floor was just 5 minutes and 39 seconds, and his previous longest stretch on the floor was 5 minutes and 35 seconds. So it really wasn't that much more. It was just more bursts. But today is actually going to be really telling, Rach, because they have an off day. And so how his body responds to the work he did yesterday, that will tell the medical staff what he can continue to do in the next games. But you heard him. He wants to be out on the floor. It's just about what his body and the medical staff allows.
Yeah, no, and I think they're being precautious for the right reasons. What this man means to the NBA, what he means to ESPN, what he meant to college basketball last year, you want to make sure that you are handling him the right way. Now, you don't want to be overly cautious. He's still a very, very young player, but ultimately, you want him to be healthy. They're not really playing for anything. They would like to make it to the postseason, but they're not going to win a championship. And ultimately, that's the goal for them, is to be able to use Zion as a piece of a championship team. So how you handle him now can dictate the future of this organization. So be cautious. Just be cautious.
I know it doesn't look like it, but the Pelicans are following a plan. They initially wanted him to go 15 minutes, then 20 minutes, then 25. But in the second game, it was a blowout, so they pulled him early. So this actually is following this winding road that they had laid down in the start of this. Now, at the end of this week, the Pelicans have a back-to-back, and all of these games are very important for them. So to me, the real question will be, you know, can they play him in the back-to-back? And I would feel like that would not be the case. So then which game do you pick to play him in? So a lot of strategy involved with him all over the place.
Yeah, and on the other side of that game last night, of course, for the Grizzlies, they fell to 0-3 in bubble action. Malika, what can you tell us about Ja Morant during that game, and how were the Grizzlies feeling about their chances to hold on to that eighth seed after the loss?
Well, what's interesting is I was asking a bunch of the Pelicans last night, because they are so successful time and time again against Memphis with Zion, without Zion. They've played against them without him as well. And they couldn't exactly put a finger on what exactly the matchup is that makes them so successful against them. It was just that so much of what Memphis does offensively is predicated on Ja Morant. And so when he doesn't get going, then that makes it so that the rest of the team struggles a little bit offensively. That being said, there is no one, and you guys know this, who is better suited to be that young and lead this team. I was talking to Ja's father yesterday, and he told me that Ja, after every single game, still gets on FaceTime with him, still goes over film, and puts everything on himself. He's not the one who says, this player or that player could have done something differently. He's always saying, this is what I could have done differently. But Ja told you, Rachel, he wants to avoid that play-in tournament altogether because he doesn't see it as totally fair. And so they need to be focusing right now on the next game, because it's getting down to it. The Pelicans are coming. The Blazers are coming. The Spurs, even though they lost a heartbreaker, are still kind of jockeying for that spot. They don't want to be in that position where they have to play in a play-in tournament.
That's well said, Malika. He is a great leader. He is a young leader that you want for this team. But understand this. The NBA did a very, very good job of making their schedule realistic. They had the most difficult schedule, the final portion of the regular season. And that's where teams were going to be able to catch grounds on them. And this is the issue that I see when you look back at it. Let's talk about the Miami Heat really, really quickly. They added veterans. They added Jay Crowder. They added Andre Iguodala because they had a young team. And then all of a sudden, the Memphis Grizzlies, they lose a veteran like Jay Crowder, who's a leader, who's been through these battles, that knows how this intensity is going up. So here you have the Memphis Grizzlies, who have lost three in a row. The San Antonio Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers are playing well because they have more veterans. So the Memphis Grizzlies are in a very, very tough spot, and I don't think that they're going to be able to avoid, obviously going 0-3 doesn't help, they're not going to be able to avoid that play-in, those play-in games.
Yeah, that was a sort of a pipe dream that they had, that they could get that four-game lead. And now I think that ship has sailed, although that's probably not a surprise with the difficulty of their schedule. The crazy thing is that they're a little bit thin on the wings. They cut Deion Waiters after making that trade. Deion is giving the Lakers some minutes right now. And I know this sounds crazy, but especially since Justice Winslow is out with injury, the Grizzlies could actually kind of use Deion. So part of it was they're thin and they had to play three games in 4 days coming straight out of the chute. It wasn't favorable. I still feel like they'll get it together and we'll get that eight seed.
They get that eight seed, again, if the ninth seed, whoever ends up in that spot, is within four games, we get a play-in game. Our friends over at ESPN Stats and Info, last time I checked, had a 98% chance going that we are getting a play-in game in the West. The East, it's just not as competitive, guys. We'll get to that later in the show. Malika, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be checking back with you as we go here. Coming up, everyone else stick around because Lou Williams has been cleared from quarantine after risking it all for some wings. Oh, yeah. What changes for the Clippers and how quickly can they put that controversy behind them? Keep it locked to the Jump. From my head to toe. It's crunch time here on The Jump. All right, after hip-hop mogul Master P, the man who has the most eloquent fish tank in all of Louisiana, he said fellow MC J. Cole is training for an NBA tryout. Guess what? The Pistons tweeted they're willing to give him a shot. Brian, do you got any tips for J. Cole?
Well, Rachel, because it's one of those days, I'm not hearing you. So I'll just tell you that J. Cole should know that the Pistons have $30 million in salary cap space. So he should not go for the lowest bid. You should negotiate for a good salary.
My gracious. The Detroit Pistons 100% have a roster spot for J. Cole. I don't even know. I haven't really seen J. Cole play other than highlights that are on Instagram like every other player. I haven't seen a missed shot yet on these highlights from basketball games played on Instagram, but the Detroit Pistons have a spot for him.
There we go. All right, TJ Warren, if it's on IG, it must be true. TJ Warren followed up his 53-point performance by dropping 34 last night in a win over the Wizards. He's now averaging 43.5 points per game. Brian, this is impressive, even if part of that average was accumulated against the Wizards. Do you expect his hot hand to continue for the Pacers?
So this has been one of the most amazing things about this last week. If you had asked me, hey, who's going to be the bubble surprise? And I would have listed maybe 135, 150 names before I said TJ Warren. But that's one of the reasons why this is exciting. And there's been some injuries to the Pacers, and Victor Oladipo's role is limited. So this is a great opportunity for him, and he has stepped forward and is introducing himself to everybody as not just an also-ran player, but a star, and it's been terrific for him.
No, I well said. Nobody would have picked him, but ultimately, in watching him do what he did against the 76ers, I called that game, and he was just so smooth, straight-faced. It reminded me of Kawhi. There wasn't any heat checks. There was nothing crazy. He did it through the offense. It was, I guarantee you it made Nate McMillan very, very proud. But that's the thing I've been most impressed with. He's done it through their offense. It's not a ton of one-on-ones, not a ton of dribbles. And it's just been really impressive these last two games.
Yeah, look, remember he was traded to the Pacers for, as he has reminded everyone the past few days, cash considerations. By the way, the Suns even attached a pick. I thought, when I was looking back on that deal and I remembered there was a pick involved, and I was like, well, of course, the Pacers were the ones who sent the pick. No. The Suns sent a pick with TJ for cash considerations. There we go. All right, I want to move on to the Clippers. Lou Williams expected to be in action just a few moments when the Clippers and Suns tip off at the top of the hour. For those of you living under a rock, Lou Will was forced into a 10-day quarantine after he visited an eatery that was also, a gentleman's club, while on an excused absence to attend a funeral in Atlanta. Richard, do you think all the players learned a valuable lesson thanks to Lou? And I don't even mean in terms of where they should or should not be going. I just mean in terms of what the NBA is and isn't allowing in what they do if they are out of the bubble for any period of time.
Well, I think the media standpoint, I think, was far worse for Lou. But I think Rashawn Holmes was the first one that gave a very quick indication, or that showed everybody that the NBA was not playing. That was the one. When you step across a couple of lines to go just pick up some food, but you don't leave the bubble and it forces you into a 10-day quarantine, that was far more eye-opening than anything that happened to Lou. And, you know, shout out to Lou Williams. I've been there. The Wings are amazing.
The thing about this is, if you just saw what happened with the Marlins, Derek Jeter gave an interview just yesterday, and he talked about how it looks like the Marlins may have started getting COVID while they were in Atlanta. And, you know, Derek Jeter even, you know, sort of laughably said that one of their players may have gotten it by going out to buy milk. Regardless of what anybody was doing, it was dangerous to sort of be out and about in Atlanta. And certainly Lou Will absolutely needed to go be with his family after that death. But what the NBA wants to say is, if you don't be careful and you don't follow the protocols, you open up the opportunity to happen what happened to the Florida Marlins. Somebody got exposed in Atlanta. The next thing you know, 18 players have it, and they had to shut it down. And so that's why the NBA had to be difficult with Lou, and that's why it seems unfair and a little bit harsh. But
I'm just keeping track of all this. The Marlins only went out to get milk. Oh, you don't think so?
No, there's nothing harsh about it at all.
Okay. I was going to say that the Marlins went out to get milk, that apparently you only go to Magic City for the Wings and you only read Playboy for the articles. I just want to keep all of this straight. I just want to make sure I have all of this. All right. League Pass game of the night, Magic Pacers, 6 o'clock Eastern. Victor Oladipo sitting out yesterday's win against the Wizards. Pacers coach Nate McMillan said that Victor will not play in back-to-backs. So, Brian, the decision for Oladipo to play or not to play is very difficult and complicated. How much is at stake for him out there if he decides to go today?
Yeah, so this one is so challenging because Oladipo has an extension opportunity this summer, either with the Pacers or possibly if they trade him to the team that he gets traded to. And so he has to protect his leg, but also show that he's healthy. And the issue is so complicated, I don't envy him. And also there's the matter of $3 million for playing. I just hope he stays healthy and this doesn't become an issue.
I do not envy the Indiana Pacers or Victor Oladipo in this entire situation. That's it. That's all I got to say.
Brian, dangling a possible Oladipo.